more archetypal fun. And the next image we're going to go to is Adam and Eve. You might ask yourself, why in the world are these what Jung talks about? Because that's the way the alchemists personified the opposite. So he's just going to alchemical literature, looking at what are the most frequent personifications of this process of opposition and synthesis. We've seen sun and moon, a dog and lion, salt and sulfur, a king and queen, and now Adam and Eve. There is something kind of unique about Adam and Eve, and we'll pick up with that on the first in the first paragraph there on under Roman numeral 3. This is Jung. Adam is the transformative substance, the old Adam who is to renew himself. Now, the text that I think, if you know, the biblical text behind this is 1 Corinthians 15:22. For as in Adam we all die, so even in Christ shall all be made alive. The theology behind that is that there was, this is in the church fathers, there was Adam. And then Christ was the second Adam. So just the word Adam implies two Adams. And the first Adam was thought to be primeval, natural, whole, but by virtue of not being developed, and a wholeness that is wholeness in its natural state. Where the second Adam, Christ as the second Adam, is that that Adam has been perfected in Christ, so that the wholeness in the first Adam, which is natural, becomes a perfected wholeness in Christ, which is the second Adam. Now this is all in the mind of the church fathers and in the mind of alchemists. But the way Jung figured this really does make sense is that the self has two states. It has a first state, and then it has a second state. The first state is the state of childhood wholeness, where you are in potential what you can become. And the goal of an analytic work is to get you to realize what you have been made to be in potential, and then to live that and to have that be the basis on which you live your life. So just the term Adam to the alchemist meant transformation, because there's a first Adam and a second Adam.
So if the first state is childhood wholeness, then the second is the renewed or the
reborn? Conscious.
Okay.
Constructed with effort in the way we've been talking of a journey into the realization of what you've been given.
But isn't there a mistake? And when you take that out into the world?
There will be.
Okay.
There will be. The third state, which we don't get to yet, is the three stages of Canuccio. Is there any more water downstairs? I could use a bottle. I'm out of here. I've been talking all week, so I'll wait till she gets back.
First and on just the developmental stage, so adolescence is like in the, child is the first stage, if the second stage sort of the conscious constructive child can be personalized as being an adult.
I would say adolescence, if the individual goes through identity crisis, would be the beginning of the construction of the second Adam. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, thanks.
I'm kind of perplexed with the same Christ is full of perfection.
That's the church's theological view. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, don't get too lost in the words. Just the idea that you know, what they were doing was linking Judaism and Christianity. The Judaism got started with Adam. And that's a very important beginning. We begin there, but where we end up as Christians is Christ. So we see it links the two traditions. And so, in their mind, Adam is a whole that is natural, and Christ is a whole that has been finalized. Adam is the source. Christ, as the second Adam, is the goal. Exactly right. If I'm trying to remember my Old Testament studies, I think Adam means earth. Does anyone up on this? I think Adam means earth. Or clay, one or the other. Pardon?
Adam was the one who was made out of clay.
Yeah. I forget. If it's not clay, it's something like that. But the reason I mention that, I don't think I've ever seen an Adam dream. I brought three that Edinger published. But you do see earth dreams, you see. So molding a piece of earth or clay, you could consider as an Adam dream. That's why I mentioned this etymological roots. But I forget exactly. But, you know, rocks that are being polished, you see, that's an Adam dream. In a way, it's a raw material, and then it's a polished material. So the archetype is Adam, although it can show up in a whole variety of ways. But I think it's a nice memory device to really realize that, you know, this what we were talking about this morning about the creation of that resolved state. That is a recreation, now using this metaphor, of what originally was. On a conscious level. What I have just said is what's in the next quote, so hopefully this will make sense. We must now turn to the question of why it was that Adam should have been selected as a symbol for the prima materia. That should be prima materia. That word keeps changing materia to work material. Prima materia is just the first substance. And what we talked about this morning would be the conflicted state of mind, where you feel raw. Transformer says, this was probably due in the first place to the fact that he was made out of clay, a piece of the original chaos, the mass of confusion, the confused mass, not yet differentiated by, I think that must be but capable of transfer, differentiation. The chaos refers to the original state of hostility between the elements, hence leading into this morning. The disorder, which the artifacts is the alchemist, gradually reduced to order by his operations. So that's just what I said. Hopefully that.
You said, you know, back to ideas of like the artist, you know, any artist like that, visual artist or musician or something, they have the materials there, you know, to paint.
Yeah.
And you have the notes, the source, the instrument, but you have this sort of unformed stuff, the
right.
Raw material,
mm-hmm.
And then the journey is in creating the art itself, the work of art,
yep.
The composition.
Yep. And just apply that to the personality now.
Yeah.
Same idea. Mm-hmm. The other little detail, which I just summarized from another paragraph, that in the alchemical recipes, rather than just finding Adam, they had to collect him. And they had to collect him from the dust from four corners of the earth. So that the initial state sometimes has to be found by effort that looks at things completely in all four directions. And Jung, I'm quoting from Jung, quoting from from the Pentateuch, apparently. Pentateuch says regarding the creation of the first being that his body was composed of four things. Same idea, that it has to be constructed.
That occurs to me that that might be some of the work of despair, that you might have to be going many different places and looking for little bits of things to collect them.
It is, but it really doesn't go up to the next recipe, because I think this collecting isn't the same. That is a discrimination by consciousness of all realms. This is more, I think, just looking at yourself totally. This is a qualitative, but the next is going to be a quantitative. You know, a taking full account of yourself.
It's real elemental. It's getting all of it, looking at the little elements, but not really putting them into the whole.
Yeah, looking at all the elements and then living with that feeling of being pulled here and there until it starts to come together, yeah.
And when that happens, it's a mystery.
That's the mystery, yeah. We'll in a moment, we'll look at a recipe that involves Adam and Eve, but I thought it might help you to see some Adam dreams to kind of conceptualize what I'm talking about. The dreams will add clarity in themselves. These are quoted by Ettinger in the Mysterium Lectures, page 233. Again, you know, you ask yourself, where do these things come from? But from Jung, these are archetypal. I was invited to a party for Adam and Eve. Where does that come from? They had never died. They were the beginning and the end. See, there you've got the two sides. That's how it shows up in dreams. They were the beginning and the end. I realized this and accepted their permanent existence. Both of them were enormous overscale. They had a sculptural and not a human look. Adam's face was veiled or covered, and I longed to know what he looked like. I dared to try to uncover his face, and I did. The covering was a very heavy layer of peat moss. Now that shows up, peat moss. Or some vegetable growth. I pulled it away just a little and peeked behind. His face was kind of frightening. It was like a gorilla or giant ape or something. So there's somebody I don't think he tells us much about it. But you can see the archetypal aspects of it. It's the beginning and end. So she's stumbling on the beginning of a process, which by its very nature is going somewhere to an end. The peat moss would represent the natural aspect of the self. That where we first meet it is in these complications we talked about all morning. That's the earthen aspect of the self. It is a material to be finished when we first meet it, and the way we experience that is that its first emergence is confusion and disorientation. See, she's pulling away the earth, so she's beginning to realize that behind that raw beginning is a more refined, hidden nature.
Did she say that behind it was
an ape? An ape. Yeah. Oh, maybe not refined. Maybe at least more clear. Yeah. That's where it starts.
And the word itself can be very frightening.
Well, here I think it's the beginning of the self is frightening, that this would be like the cup of the abominations. That's the animalistic beginning. In fact, it starts very often in a drive or an obsession or an emotion. And you think you're just being plagued by a nuisance when in fact it's the low appearance of a future higher state.
Has a primitive quality.
Yes, the first appearance of the self is primitive.
Because if she took a peek in and looked and saw this very
eight-point,
but she thought it was Adam.
Mm-hmm. That is so important for Jung's work, that we talk about the self and we often think of it in its final condition, but when it greets us, it comes on in a very primitive way. Primitive affect, primitive desire. Okay.
But you know, one aspect is colder or more cold?
Cooler. Some people are hot, some people are cold.
No.
They're cold.
You got my air
conditioner. No. I don't have that bar on.
I have auto van going there. That's the problem. We got
new air conditioner.
You
should change places.
Because
I don't want any cold.
I've got the heat on. I've got the heat that's on. It's not the air.
Okay. Can you turn it off?
Maybe just turn it
off
and turn
it
on.
Well, I'm cold.
See, this is the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you be able to turn the fan on there?
Oh,
yes.
Can you
hold yourself
for something?
I can't turn
that on, but then
oh,
it's covering the hot fan.
Yeah. Because she was. No, are you getting hot or cold?
They're hot on that side, because they're the denser on this side.
So don't you turn the heat off and the ceiling fans off?
Ceiling fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Is this meaningful that we start talking about Adam and everybody's...
We're afraid of the body now.
Our polar.
Who's the gorilla thing got it going?
Okay, now let me know if that gets me.
It's cold.
Can I have these?
Sorry, Beth.
Pardon?
Can I have these?
Yes.
Okay. We'll have some more on, too.
Oh, okay, certainly, if you want to take them somewhere.
Circular.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I was just asking, there's something that's coming, though. It's more, it's closer to the truth. I mean, it's like animals don't play all these games. The reason
like
it works and stuff. Uh-huh. They just demonstrate a cleaner, clearer,
yeah.
Emotional
state. But I think to remember that what the Adam is trying to get at is that the first appearance of the self is crude. It can be lust. It can be hate. It can be depression. It can be bankruptcy. It can be all of these really difficult experiences that don't fit in with a polished life. And one is first inclined to say, well, let's get rid of this sexual problem. Let's get rid of this hatred for the neighbor and so on. When in fact, it is not something to be gotten rid of. It's the beginning of a process that we need to understand and help to reach its conclusion. That's the point of this Adam stuff, I believe.
Integrate it.
Really transform it. Accept it in its low form. And then let it evolve, that it will have an evolving of its own. It has its, absolutely has its own light, its own intentionality, its own intelligence.
And but it hurt you that Edward Scissorhands has got an image of that. He tries to rescue the boy, but because his hands are scissors, he cuts him and everybody thinks that he's attacking him.
Mm-hmm.
He's really trying to protect him. So when that self first shows up, it can even though it may not have a bad intent, its undevelopedness can end up being very difficult to deal with, and you may feel cut or damaged by it. So
or you might try to deal with it in a way that cuts it and damages it.
Yeah, either way. It's that, that it's not going to operate in a civilized way, the way we're used to having things operate.
Two more dreams, I think, which will can hopefully give you a feel. Yes. Right. You learn to contain it, but you don't squash it in that containing. This one, Michelle, I think speaks to your question. I think this is the most beautiful of them all. Edinger says it's a middle-aged professional woman with a positive father or princess complex. And he says, I mean by that a woman in the habit of being granted what she wants and who takes it as the basis for her existence that if she really desires something, it will be forthcoming. Circumstances, like a good daddy, will give it to her. That's the princess complex. So that's the psychology of the dreamer. And just look how the dream shows a different aspect to life. I'm walking down a mountain path that leads to a stream. To my surprise, I find a naked man stretched out sleeping by the side of the stream. That'd be Adam. Or it tells us it's an Adam dream. He's large and strong, virile and bearded. His backpack and clothes are lying to the side. Somewhat frightened, my first thought is to run and retreat. But when the man awakes and looks at me, I realize he has no intention of hurting me. I know he will let me pass unharmed. I apologize for disturbing him. Turn to the right. That's already important, you see. She's going to the conscious side. And go through a tunnel. I am slowly and carefully climbing over and among huge rocks. Now here's the real Adam image. As I'm about to step on one of the rocks, I'm startled to discover that the rock moves. She's realizing that life is taking on a movement of its own past what she wishes and thinks she will always be granted. The rock is in fact a naked man. As I look around, I see there are several men among the rocks. It is difficult to distinguish them from the rocks. Both are clay colored. Again, an Adam reference. The men are sleeping as I enter, but some of them wake up and look at me as I pass by. So this fact that this rock has an independent movement would be a realization of the ego that thinks it controls everything. It gets whatever it wants, and what it's doing here, it's stumbling on a process with a movement of its own. That's Adam. Adam is when life starts to take on a movement of its own, and generally it meets us in its first form in this primitive dimension. Yes. Though that potentiality, you see, has an intentionality of its own.
Which may not be the best thing for her?
It would probably be the best thing for her, but she wouldn't feel it that way because she's been living in the ideal.
Uh-huh.
I get what I want. I want something, I go get it.
And
well, I think the first thing she's going to have to realize is there's a movement to life which is not something I've planned. And that's going to discombobulate her princess complex. But these stars that get into these messes, you could say, if they would ever follow it through, is the beginning of a deeper process. Probably they don't follow it through. But it's where a path thwarts her understanding of the way things work and begins to lead her in its own direction.
Okay. masculine.
Pardon me?
The right is also the masculine side of the person.
Yeah, but she's out of touch with this masculine. Yeah. Life has put her into a position where she's stepping on something that moves, where she has always thought, I move.
She thought she's the controller.
She's thinking she has been the controller. I wish it, I get it. Daddy would buy it for me. And now she's coming upon a process that has its own intent.
She's taking things for granted, and suddenly she finds herself in a situation in which what she assumed was a certain situation
is no longer the case. Yeah.
And she's going to have to attend to it. She can't just walk by.
Right. Well, it's going to reorient her whole life.
And she can't control it.
She can't control it. It's going to control her. That's Adam. Adam is the development that starts when you meet the self in a low level and then you follow where it leads you. It's not unlike what we just talked about. It's just another perspective on it, another image for it.
These men, though, don't seem to be so connected to her. You know, like they're not after her or something.
No.
I mean, she doesn't have to take any action, obviously, none of us do.
Because she's discovering there's something in her that has a life of its own. Yeah. And you see, she steps on it, she thinks it's a rock. So, or just a natural piece of life. And in fact, what she thought was a natural piece of life is something far bigger than she imagined.
And they were sleeping and they've now woken up.
And they were waking up.
In other words, something has changed. If she just stepped on it and saw that it was a rock in the shape of a man, then it hadn't taken on mobility. But it has woken up.
Yep. And
it's kind of like the fairy tales in which the dragon wakes up. You know, something has changed on another level.
Yeah.
That's going to start moving towards you or doing something.
I think the difference with the dragon, typically they don't know where they're going.
Yeah.
But this guy probably does know where he's going.
So this is the first stage of Adam.
The Adam as the rock would be the first Adam. And we don't really see the second Adam, although we see that within the first Adam is an intentionality of its own, heading toward the second Adam. And where that guy takes her would be the second Adam.
So this is this parallel to the seed and then the destructive thing.
Yeah. I mean, just think of a woman who's, you know, daddy bought her a new car, new clothes, paid for her college education. She's pretty. She gets the job she wants. She gets the man she wants. She gets the house she wants. And then she hits a wall. And what will make life go forward is no longer what she wants. It's what another process wants. And she's in the beginning stage of realizing there's another want beside what she wants, which is just as important for her life. And that's the beginning of Adam. Yeah. Page 247. Want one more? This is not easy to grasp, but these dreams, I think, are marvelous. This is a little sad, but it still makes the point. I was asked to be a witness to the opening of a tomb. Another woman. I don't think he says much about her. It almost doesn't matter because it's archetypal. Oh, the dreamer was in her early 30s at the time. I was asked to be a witness to the opening of a tomb. This was the last time it was going to be unsealed. I stood in the basement at the top of a flight of stairs leading into a sub-basement. Doors opened and I could see into a room down into the sub-basement. All of a sudden, a tombstone suspended on long rope swung into view. It dangled there for a moment, and I tried desperately to read the inscription on it. It didn't remain long, but moved out of sight. The stone was old and worn, but the surroundings were not old. Did the name begin with an A? There was the Adam reference. Did the name begin with an A? It was a short name, four or five letters. Then a man, or maybe two, appeared at the bottom of the stairs and said that I was to sign my name to show that I had been witness to this event. I turned back, preparing to leave, and I saw a Negro man sitting on the floor. I walked past him and then turned back and said, "Was I supposed to sign?" And the Negro's only response was yes. He said it was as though he didn't care whether I signed or not, and he wasn't especially helpful or friendly. I felt I must follow through with the assignment, although it took some effort to do so. The Negro allowed me to take the paper and sign it. Then it seemed that, according to him, more was expected. I was supposed to write something elaborate. Seeing a pad of paper, I took it and went over to a desk. As I stood there, I realized this was a bigger assignment than I could cope with. I needed time. Also, I wanted to look up a word in the dictionary. I couldn't complete it now. I must give it some thought. So there you get the connection with Adam and the assignment, asking us to take a particular direction in life.
That's bigger than the ego thought.
As according to him, she never really was able to understand it. But you can see the dream is trying to press a development home.
But there's something missing. The black man that speaks to her is not helpful. Not enough information is coming.
Yeah, it's hard to tell whether he wasn't helpful or is he a reflection of her own unconcern. Mm. Because she's ready just to turn and walk away.
Mm-hmm. And it said it was the last time that it had been opened, suggesting that it had been opened a couple of times before.
Apparently she had had previous therapists. Mm-hmm. And it was the last chance. You do get several chances, but a finite number. Okay, you happy with the basic concept? Beginning, end, primitive beginning with an intentionality leading to an end, unconscious self to conscious self, primitive manifestations to realized individuality. I think it does. Yeah, it does give you second chances, but it says, you know, I think I'll go talk to Mary Smith. She's listening. Page 6. Another recipe, this time involving Adam. I'll read you the recipe, and then I've tried to summarize Jung's interpretation in points 1 through 5. Noah must wash me in the deepest sea with pain and toil, that my blackness may depart. I must lie here in the deserts among many serpents, and there is none to pity me. I must be fixed to this black cross. I must be cleansed therefrom with wretchedness and vinegar, and made white, that the inwards of my head may be like the sun or earth, and my heart may shine like a carbuncle, and the old Adam come forth again from me. O Adam Kadmon, how beautiful thou art, and adorned with the rimka, the many-colored garment of the king of the world. So here's Jung's commentary and Edinger's summary, trying to be put in its most efficient form. It is evident that the speaker is the feminine personification of the prima materia. Shouldn't be an L there again. Prima materia. In the negredo state. Negredo is the first dark state. black state. She is desire. Should be a quote after desire. She is desire. So that would be the first Adam, the primitive. It's, this process starts in some form of desirousness, either positive or negative, love or hate, lust or hate. She contains in herself the first Adam, like the mother her child, and at the same time awaits the second Adam, that is the Adam before the fall, the perfect original man. That would be Christ. Adam Kadmon, that's the term that's used. Adam Kadmon is the image of the Anthropos. Anthropos would be the image of the complete human being, the completed, fulfilled human being. Adam Kadmon is the image of the Anthropos as it manifests itself in the Kabbalah. He's thought. He's thought of as the first emanation of Ein Sof. Ein Sof is the original creative stuff of the universe. I'll show you a picture here in a second. And he's also thought of as the totality of the Sephirotic tree. We'll talk about that in a second. The Kabbalistic idea is that the original creative power, the Ein Sof, which signifies infinity, emanates, it shines forth out of its potential. And what it emanates is Adam Kadmon. According to some versions, Adam Kadmon then may further emanate the whole Sephirotic tree. In other versions, the Sephirotic tree itself can be considered as the body of Adam Kadmon. I will try to explain that. In the Jewish mystical tradition, there is the creative power of God is called the Ein Sof. I think it must mean like the one stuff. And it emanates into the world in the form of this figure called Adam Kadmon. And that's Adam right there. So what Adam represents would be like Christ in the Jewish, if you compare the Jewish and the Christian traditions. He is the embodiment on the earth of this creative power. So he's in the Jewish tradition the second Adam, where in Christianity he would be Christ. And it said from him that a tree emerges. There you can see a little bit more. And there's Adam as a tree. And those different nodes, those different circles, are different aspects of his power, love, and so on. I think here. That aspect of him would be grounding, that aspect of him would be strength, that aspect of him would be sexuality, that aspect of him there would be glory, and so on. He manifests the glory of this one substance of God in many different ways. And then the manifestations of the one creative principle in the form of Adam show up as these different nodes of a tree. So you got one Ein Sof, Adam, tree. They're all different manifestations of the same creative power. There you see he's planting the tree as the nodes of Adam, who is the creative principle. So the point in all this is in the Kabbalistic tradition, they have both a first and a second Adam. Where for the Christians, the second Adam is Christ. For the Kabbalists, the Jewish mystics, the second Adam is Adam Kadmon.
Has the second Adam come
there? I don't know Kabbalistic living that well. I believe for them it's what would be the content of a mystical experience. See, they're trying to experience this Adam Kadmon. No, it's not in the traditional Jewish apocalyptic sense, but here is an experience waiting for anyone, well, probably any Jewish person who meditates on the nature of God to experience. This is an offshoot of the Jewish tradition. Jung was very interested in the Kabbalah for this reason. Yeah, and it really does carry on the traditional theology of Judaism to another level. There's no place, I think I can say this, there's no place in Judaism that says Christ is available or the Messiah is available, the second coming is available as a mystical experience. The Kabbalists say that. And that return of Adam in the mystical experience is Adam Kadmon, as a reflection of God's creative energy. Yeah.
Was Jung Jewish or not?
No.
That he knew a lot about the Jewish theology?
Well, I think he studied every mythological system.
The
he was particularly interested in the mystics because that's where you see images of the self. Yeah, but not only. I mean, he was interested in Chinese, you name it. Now, he's a preacher's kid.
I thought so, but then all of a sudden I wondered what the stuff with the Kabbalah, because we've done a little bit of a study of the Kabbalah.
Was that accurate in what I said? Does it sound right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm probably not that familiar with it. No, I think Jung was interested in any place he could see an image of the self. And this is so clearly an image of the self. And then when he saw it coming up in alchemical recipes, it was mandatory to build the link. Well, now, if we take Jung's commentary and try to put it in our own words, we're starting off with an emotional experience of blackness. That would be the feminine personification of prima materia, would be the emotional experience of confusion. I think the Black Madonna is both poles. It would be, her blackness would be that the blackness here that we're working with, and she's always connected with sites of physical healing
and fecundity.
If you go in, you know, outside of Zurich, there's trying to think of the order. I can't think of the order. What are the monks in Meinrad? Is that? Yeah, what order is that? Whatever it is, Meinrad is built after the cathedral in Einsiedeln, which is about 40 miles outside of Zurich. And that's one of the places of the Black Madonna. And when you go in, on all the walls there are the crutches of people who have been healed. So she's both the blackness and the healing, both.
Mm-hmm. She's embodying both sides. Wholeness, really, isn't she?
Well, certainly an aspect of wholeness excluded from the Christian medieval tradition. Yeah.
But you don't have to get the blackness out before you can get the light.
Well, that's what we're dealing with here. I don't know if I would say get it out.
Well, have it.
Well, I'd say let it get finished with you.
We embrace it.
Well, I don't know many people who embrace it.
Well, all the
the growth step into the dark. The baby, you know, if you open up the womb and put light in there, the baby's dead. The seed develops under the ground where it's dark. So new life, those life processes happen in the darkness. If you don't have the darkness, you're not going to have any new life.
I'm not sure here that that's exactly the same darkness. I think this blackness here is more the emotional feeling of being lost.
In the dark.
Yeah, to be in the dark,
yeah.
Right. And what then has to come out of that, the recipe is saying, is the awareness of the first Adam. Namely, that you are beset by an emotional experience that you need to take seriously and to begin to transform. Then, in the second point, comes the serpents, which would have to do with, as we've seen now in other examples, the emotions that could sidetrack the process because they're too strong. Bitten by the serpents would be being bitten by, upset by, distracted by the negative emotions. So once you get the basic pattern, you can kind of see it repeats itself. And that's, if you do try to read the book, I think that's something you can kind of keep in mind. Where one version may symbolize it one way, here it symbolizes snakes. But it's very often a singular process, which Jung would take as the process of coming to consciousness by the self, as depicted in recipes. But there were parallelisms.
Okay, we say the serpent to act in the same way as the temptations.
Yeah, right. I think that's why it serpents.
Mm-hmm.
The next image is being fixed to a cross, which I would take, Janice, back to your original comment. Here it is discerning it in all aspects. Jung, of course, doesn't fail to observe the possible psychological meaning of that cross. All four functions have to be brought in to understand it. Some of us did the Pali dreams, and he was a physicist who worked with his dreams with Jung, and he would always understand them intellectually, but he could never understand their feeling value. They never got past theory. So this is showing the importance of completely recognizing what it is that's coming up. Until the white appears, remember the whiteness before? Same whiteness, till clarity emerges. Where the previous text emphasized the colors and integrating them, here it emphasizes don't get sidetracked by the poison. Poison. The poisonous emotions, the poisonous way that emotions feel to you.
In other words, don't push them down, but don't ask them to be down either.
Yeah, and do know that it's going to be hurtful and try to stay out of panic. Because it's part of the process. Or cause you to abandon the process, or as we were saying, leak, go out and do something silly with the feelings rather than hold them. I like this last part. Some of us are doing Dante, Divine Comedy, and we've been discussing its Christian aspect, and here I think you'll see the difference. Those of you who are doing that. So we see that the old Adam is immediately followed by Adam Kadmon, the Anthropos, who is called King of the World. So that the old Adam and Adam Kadmon are merged with each other. Now, it is significant that the old Adam is mentioned at the very moment when the perfect Adam, the shining primordial man, is obviously meant. A change for the better does not bring a conversion of lightness, of darkness into light and of evil into good, but at most is a compromise in which the better slightly exceeds the worse. The idea is that we would expect the recipe to say, Adam Kadmon, come forth again. But the recipe says, old Adam, come forth, and then immediately says, old Adam, O Adam Kadmon. And the idea there is that the alchemist must have had a slip of the pen or a slip of the tongue, and the unconsciously depicts the fact that the redeemed condition is both a mixture of the old and the new. It is not perfection, it is wholeness. That Adam Kadmon is not an adequate depiction of the end state because it's too perfect. The end state is always a mixture of that new self and the old that brings us our humility because we are fallible and human like everybody else.
It strikes me like, you were a child, and yet it's still there inside of you. I think you can't really grow out of it, that you embody the first state. Your first state you talked about earlier.
Yeah. You bring part of it with you. Yeah. Yeah, I think the reason he makes such a big deal of it, we think that the health is like this paradise and everything's good and you will be always happy and always kind. And in fact, it is a development, but you are still human. That's an understatement. Well, that's Adam. Just again to try to give you a taste of the various images the alchemists use, therefore that Jung tried to investigate as prime ways this process of opposition and synthesis is symbolized in dreams. Many different metaphors, different aspects of it are emphasized. One emphasizes this aspect of it, one another aspect, but it is an attempt to circumscribe what Jung understands as the birth of selfhood.
Again, it's called an Adam.
Yeah.
And I see the next topic is the
stage is worth it. Eve would be the woman's version.
Another class.
Well, it's written from a Old Testament perspective. You have to go to a pre-Christian tradition to get it. Veil of Mysteries. Ishtar. Inanna. Inanna would be the classic death and rebirth. She was asking, where's Eve? I said, well, Eve is not included because this is a patriarchal tradition. And to get to the Eve transformation, it wouldn't be any different than the Adam transformation, but to see it symbolized, you'd have to go to the mother cults, Ishtar, Inanna. And Inanna is the classic because she descends and arises again.
Well, if anybody's interested in that, I have about 3 shelves full of the feminine.
Can you spell the Inanna thing?
I've got a lot of them. Inanna?
How do you spell
it? There's Inanna, and there's Ishtar, and Aradia, and I-N-N-A-N-A. That's one of them. But there are as many of the women's mysteries as there are names. You'll probably find
the classic Jungian study is a Descent to the Goddess. You know that one?
Yeah.
Sylvia Pereira.
Okay.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Descent to the goddess? How do you spell Pereira?
P-E-R-R-A-R-A?
E-R-A?
Yeah, it might be E-R-A. E-R-R-E-R-A. And she was just here last year.
Also, Sandy's family, your books, your the place you of the Elysian
probably Villa of Mysteries would be another one by Fierce David. Villa of Mysteries. It's beautiful. It's tell us, Sandy. It's your thing. It's a woman's initiation in Dionysian initiation in Pompeii. And the woman interprets the frescoes of the initiation. And it's inspired. Both of his works are beautiful. Are you ready for the three stages of the Kinyakyo? Because we're all pricks, that's why. let me sum it up, and then we can go into the text as much as you want, or we could just talk, either way. Let me read you the passage that Jung makes a great deal of from Gerhard Dorn, who was a German medieval alchemist. This is right out of Dorn's book. We conclude that meditative philosophy, that's alchemy, consists in overcoming the body by a mental union. The first union does not as yet make the wise man, but only the mental discipline of wisdom. The second union of the mind with the body shows forth the wise man, hoping for and expecting that blessed third union with the first unity, that is, the unus mundus, the latent unity of the world. Let me diagram that. The idea is, in their mind, that there is, in the material they're cooking, the prima materia, the first material, usually it's like some waste material or lead or something like that. There's a spirit. And when they cook the spirit, when they cook the stone, the spirit emerges and assumes a separate existence. That is the unio mentalis. Which means one mind.
It seems odd though, one mind is separated.
What's odd about it?
You mean out of what they're cooking, this thing emerges and it has one mind? Or is one mind?
This whole thing is one mind.
Oh, the whole sum of it.
Yeah.
So the two parts are of one mind.
Not of one mind. A one mind is created
from
over against the chaos of the first material.
Okay.
So this is chaos. This is stability.
Okay. Now,
this is clarity.
We're going with a 16th century mind here, so. Mm-hmm.
So this is the first stage of the community. First stage of union is a separation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then, and that is not, this is still junk. To make this thing gold, this spirit has to come back down again and join with the first material. And this is the second meaning. And it's not given here, but what they call this the unio corporalis. The one body. So, confused mass and spirit separates, that's the one mind. They cook it further and they do their hocus pocus. If they do it all right, that spirit will come back. I mean, this is done in a vessel, right? That spirit will come back into the stone, or whatever it is, and when that happens, the stone will turn into gold. Yes. Almost. Wait till Jung gets in here and makes it more complicated.
Now, are we talking about, like, the person now?
Well, this is the alchemist.
Okay, working with...
Now, taking as a metaphor,
okay, yeah.
This would be that initial emotional condition. Mm-hmm. And what we are, if we're working in this model, what we are trying to do is get people to be able to be objective about what they're experiencing. You know, you may hate your neighbor, you may hate your wife, you may hate your job. And the unio mentalis would be getting people to say, I hate my job, I hate my wife, I hate my neighbor, I love my wife, I love my neighbor's wife, whatever. And not blame.
Like the second king.
Yes, almost. See, where we're going to go with this, just to lay your questions a little bit, is Dorn thinks that everything we've done up to now is too limited, as does Jung. So, yes, the guys we have read up to so far would have said, this is the preparation for the second king. And the second king occurs when understanding comes back to the emotions. And here there's objectivity and this is about control and objectivity and responsibility and a little bit of rigidity, because it's about admitting and controlling this stuff down here so that it doesn't get out of control. When that occurs sufficiently, after a sufficient period of time, and the spirit comes back in now as a metaphor. In other words, as consciousness can go back into the emotions and live them without their being destructive and without having to control them.
When it rises up first, that's really laws.
Laws and clarity and rules and belonging and responsibility and ownership.
That's where laws are.
This is 80% of therapy right here. This is 80% of therapy right here.
The culture is a lot, you know.
Yes.
This is wrong and this is right.
Right. Again, my seven habits of highly effective people, that's this. AA, that's AA.
But here you are. The bottom, the first one then, that's the pure material almost would be like the Roman era. And then up top would be like the Christian era.
This is Roman, this is Christian.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now we're going to move.
And now what alchemy is about is trying to get this understanding to coexist and be part of the emotional sphere. Now, that would be the second king. However, what Jung liked so much about the alchemist Dorn was he said that's only the second phase. There's a third phase. And that is when this unites with the world.
which is not an act of will, but it's another mystery. And that's what Jung would call a synchronism. In other words, it's not enough just to get whole. You have to take that wholeness and put it into the world. And what I think he adds here is when you're ready to do that, you don't just put it into the world. The world comes to you ready to have you put it in it.
So is that the third stage?
No, that's the third stage. It is, and again, this is an artificial dissection, but we're just trying to conceptualize all the different facets of growth, that in the final analysis, it takes a response on the part of the world to give you the right opportunity to place what you've achieved in the world. And this is not a complete solution. This is the complete solution. This is what Jung came to at the end of his life. And as you can see, what it, the great problem it creates is, how does the world know to come to you when you're ready? Which means that this spirit thing is also in matter. Matter is intelligent. This is where Jung and Pauli got talking. So that these synchronistic moments occur, where you just go, holy smokes, how could that have happened? Just the right relationship opportunity. Just the right job opportunity.
So you have this idea is to get yourself ready, and then you
might
be able to
see. Again, remember, Jung never abandons the importance of will and the importance of reductive understanding and of responsibility in doing. But in the deepest sense, for you to fulfill the meaning that you were put here to fulfill, the world has to be there to receive it. And then when it does, very often it does in a way that leaves you scratching your head.
By synchronicity.
I can tell you a personal example. When I was in training, everything went wrong. And finally one thing went right, first couple of years. And I got a fellowship from the Rotary Club. And the fellowship was for $18,000. And they paid $9,000 up front. And you had to, after 6 months, you had to fill out paperwork and submit it. And then if they were happy with your performance, they'd send you the other $9,000. And I got that maybe about a month before the midpoint exams. In my midpoint exams, I failed my exam with von Franz, the one person I respected, to the point where she was jumping up and down, yelling at me, pounding on the table. It was not a very pleasant experience. And she even said, "And what you said was stupid." Oh, ouch. And so I thought, I quit. This is it. I'm leaving this. I am not meant to be here. And I was walking out the hallway, and there was at the old institute, there was a little table where they would just put the mail. They wouldn't, you'd have to go through it. And I said, I quit this fucking program. And I looked, and there was a letter for me on top of the mail stack. And I grabbed it, and I walked out, and I saw a friend, and my friend said, "Do you want to get a drink?" And I said, "Fuck you." And kept on walking, and I opened up the letter. It was the other $9,000. See what I mean? These things come just at the moment when you and the world are in negotiation. And that's the third stage of the Kiyunkyo, that this process is not finished until it's placed in the world. And that requires, like the other process, is your will, your intent, but it also requires the world to come to you.
First stage
is the emotional state of being the first Adam, wrestling with the conflict that we talked about in the earlier recipes, the emotional chaos that comes from the sick kings that we saw, and trying to distinguish, own up to, and take responsibility for the emotions that are there. And to have the strength to live with that, to be able to discuss it, and to not have to go do something stupid because of it. So that your consciousness is getting strengthened. That's why it's called the one mind. It is really putting the mind in control of the feelings. Up to that point, it's just like Freud, it's just like pop psych. But then, once that has been attained, there will be a movement again within the dreams themselves to bring that understanding back in touch with the very thing you have tried to control and to be in relationship with it. So it's no longer control. It's a reciprocity and an intermingling of emotion, states of mind, and understanding. The first one is developing a strong ego. The second one is the ego existing with the personality, not having to be in charge of things. It's a return of subjectivity, but a subjectivity that's capable of objectivity.
So we're still talking about the going up and the coming back down.
Right, and then when the coming back down is completed, when there is a rapport between emotions and thought, feelings and action.
So the top is emotion, the bottom is thought.
No, top's thought, but then when it descends back down again,
the bottom's emotion.
The bottom is emotion
because that's the chaos.
That's
still the beginning part.
But that. See, when the mind comes back down again, that chaos is moderated.
Organized.
You don't blow up. You can express appropriately what you're feeling.
So when it comes back down, you've got the combination of the emotion and the thought
together.
And that's when you make something happen.
And then that's when something comes to you.
That's when something happens.
For you're making it happen.
But sometimes you have to, the ego has to demand something. The ego stays, well, just like the fellow who just won the money from the lottery. He said, I said to this thing, this metaphysical, he's in the metaphysical store, I said, if you want me to do this work, you have to give me the money so I can quit doing my accounting. And just like your ego has said, there's a boundary here.
No, it's different, Janice.
Is that the same thing?
No, because we'll get to that when we go to Job.
Okay.
That's appropriate when you're dealing with the Job model.
Okay.
But what Jung is trying to do is show there are different ways, completely different ways, that the self is activated, which require completely different responses from us. In the alchemical model, you see, I had given up. I quit. I said, I quit. And then it came.
And there was the money.
I wasn't making any demands.
You weren't making any demands.
You were in some way saying, I'm not going to be punished. I'm not.
No, I was saying I quit.
Oh, okay.
You're talking about sort of like that thing in Secret. I mean, you know, they want to will a guy have some money on his, I don't know if anybody saw it, the money on his ceiling. And every night he looks up and he says, I'm going to make this much money selling his book. It's the guy that chicken soup for the soul time.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem quite authentic or something.
No, that one doesn't work like that. So my experience of that was with my family. My mother had died. And I've done all of, my family's crazy as hell, and I'm the one who spent all of my life in therapy, spent all of my money in therapy. And I finally said, I was sitting at the table when my mother died, and I said, I want something back. I want to be paid. I did all of this work. I want something back. And I went, boom. The next morning I got the call the next morning from my brother
that I inherited money from my mother enough to be able to live and not live the way I need. But it was, and literally, it was this, you're not saying the same thing, but it's not wishful thinking. It's a very crucial turning point that is usually very short-lived, you know, like yours, was instantaneous.
Well, I don't think we're saying the same thing,
okay.
Because...
But you, when you picked up the letter,
yeah.
Off there, you had given it all up.
I had given it up.
But that was an emotional statement.
Yeah.
You were very emotional.
Yes, I was swearing as a matter
of
fact.
So you may not have given up and went back and said that's your voluntary...
No, I had quit. I was done.
But weren't you asking for some sort of confirmation?
No.
No?
I was done. You see, I want to make it clear, the self has different processes. That's why I have tried to say there are different models for understanding the way the self works. How do you know what response is appropriate? By looking at what the dreams are doing. And when the dreams are operating this way, it is not a question of putting demands. It's a question of following where this process goes and then watching how you receive. Now, when we get the answer to Job, it's a much different process. There, you're right.
You're saying there are different processes.
Different formulas.
Different formulas.
It works in different ways. It's not just understandable in one paradigm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what I've been trying to get across, that Jung first said, the unconscious just gets creative. No, it doesn't. It gets created in different ways depending on how it approaches you and depending on your response. And this is not just some theory stuff. We really look in dreams to see how is the self behaving, and then we try to advise people, now here's the way you go, as a response to where the self is to help facilitate its creative space. Now this process is one of conflict and opposition. We'll see with Ion, it's one of withdrawing projections. We'll see with Job, it is one about speaking back to God.
Different
attitudes between the ego and the self, required by the ego depending on how the self is activated. Don't ask me why it's activated one way sometimes and other ways the next. I don't know, but it certainly is. And Jung was trying to see all the different ways that we need to understand how the self operates and how we are challenged to react to it.
Can you see these different responses between yourself and
the self? I think you can, yeah. I think one exception might be Job. Job, I think, is basically when you're dealing with the self that has been shaped by the individual's enduring a traumatic experience. Resolution. Well, that's what I typed up on the last page. Do you want to, maybe you can read it. I think we've done quite a bit today. You can probably just read it your own time. Hopefully it will just say what I said. I'll just read you the last two paragraphs. Bottom of page 7. Because what I wanted to do throughout this whole series is, you know, as I said, give you an overview of how Jung's work developed, and then also pay a little bit of attention today and at the very last class, where did Jung stop? Where did he leave off? And where he left off was, holy smokes, what's the nature of matter that there's such a thing as synchronicity? So the work on the self and the opposites and the resolution leads to an understanding of synthesis, but as soon as you understand synthesis, you realize it's not finished until the world comes in, and then you need to say, so what's the nature of the world that it can act that way? That flies in the face of every assumption of science. He knew that. He wasn't, you know, wasn't a goofball. And enter Wolfgang Pauli, the physicist, that's what these two guys were talking about, which Jung arrived at because of his observations of how the world responds to somebody in this process. So I just got a couple of quotes.
quotes from Mysterium, because that's where he starts articulating this. Next to last paragraph with this conjecture. The paragraphs up to that are just telling you what I told you here. So with this conjecture, see where I am? The identity of the psychic and the physical. And with this conjecture of the identity of the psychic and the physical, we approach the alchemical view of the unus munus, the one world, the potential world on the first day of creation. So his idea is when these synchronicities occur, they are a repeat of the early wholeness that you were born with, reappearing in time and space through the intervention of matter. And he, as he says, microphysics is feeling its way into the unknown side of matter, just as complex psychology is another word for Jungian psychology, is pushing forward into the unknown side of psyche. How do these two converge? The common ground of metaphysics and depth psychology is as much physical as psychic, and therefore neither, but rather a third thing, a neutral nature, which can at most be grasped, and hence, since in essence, it is transcendental. The transcendental psychophysical background corresponds to a potential world insofar as all those conditions which determine the form of empirical phenomena are inherent in it. This obviously holds as much for physics as for psychology, or to be more precise, for microphysics as much as the psychology of consciousness. Basic point there is the reason synchronicity can occur, the reason that matter and psyche seem to operate together at this final stage of union, is that they are connected in a way we don't understand. He's saying there might be a third thing that we don't know about, of which matter is one pole and the psyche is another pole. And the future of research can profitably be directed toward that question. So he starts with the hero myth. He realizes how much more complicated it is than just the unconscious guiding us. We have many different ways of understanding how we interact with the unconscious so it can guide us. And then he ends up with the question, what's the nature of the material world and psychological processes? And said at the end of his life, I hope future generations will pick up on this problem. So the two bookends of Jungian psychology, the beginning is the hero myth, the end bookend is the unity of psyche and matter. And the one flows over the guy's lifetime from one to the other. Not quite the same, but close. We'll get to that when we get to transference. This is a series of, how many? Six? Three? I think four. We got four more, and we'll get to that, I think, at the end, how this bears out in transference. But in a way, you're right. The third thing in the transference, certainly it touches the body.
Well, I mean, it's similar too, isn't it, to a man and a woman when they get together and they have a child.
Taking that then as a metaphor for the intrapsychic and the extrapsychic.
Mindell's work on the dream body, the combination.
Very similar.
That it's a field and that you can switch from channel to channel, from physical to psychic or things
like
that.
It's the same, yeah.
Yeah.
This is where Jung hoped future research would go.
The first, you said there's three called phases of the writing, the hero myth, and then the second one. How the unconscious.
The hero myth was like what we started with, the first workshop. And what we've been doing is looking at how Jung realized that was an inadequate way of understanding the relationship between the ego and the unconscious. In the hero myth, he says the unconscious guides the ego. That was very early on. Not untrue, but see how he
realized it is much more complicated than just the unconscious guiding the ego. The ego has to take a certain role, and the unconscious can operate in a couple of different ways. And the ego has to know that and know how to respond to it to get the unconscious to guide us. So his main life work was understanding how his first sentence was way too simple, and that yes, the unconscious does guide us, but it's very has different ways of guiding us, and it requires different things of us along the way. And then the final point he got to was a question: how does matter fit in here? Because it certainly is crucial, but we don't have any way of conceptualizing. And that's as much a challenge to science as it is to psychology.
Well,
are
we trying to find the spiritual nature of matter?
That's exactly what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, there's a handful, I think. I love Married Women. She definitely. Arnie Mandel, that Janice mentioned. I think Anne McGuire. They're the ones I know of that are actively. There might be others.
Anne McGuire?
Mm-hmm. Hang on a second. Losing my voice. She asked who else is working in this area. And I was saying, I don't know her.
She does, I'm reading her book on psychotherapy,
uh-huh. I know her. I don't know that she's worked on it so much.
On what?
On the spiritual aspect of matter.
Okay, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's what you were talking about, I thought.
Yeah.
The ones I know on spirit and matter are Woodman, Mandel, and then Anne McGuire.
M-I-N-D-E-L-L?
Arnold Mandel.
His first book is called The Dream Body, and I find that extremely difficult to understand.
I always found it difficult.
Yes.
I never really got into it.
His other books are short. The River's Way is very good. He's got three smaller books that are very good, and he's got one on The River's Way is the only one that I can remember the title of, but there's one on dying, the passage of dying, and then there's others. And I've read them over and over again, and every time they really... They're very good, and they're much clearer.
There's one more who wrote, Alfred Ziegler.
What does Anne McGuire write?
She is a London dermatologist.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, she
came. She's one of my heroes.
Is she still alive?
Yep. And
yeah.
She was here 20 years ago.
Oh, okay.
She's an English dermatologist who works with dermatological disturbances through therapy. And she's just published two books, The Seven Deadly Sins and Mirror of the Soul.
What was the title of her book?
There was another one.
I thought two. Yeah. Skin disease, mirror of the soul.
She was part of the initial, when she came, she was talking about, she was part of the initial group that identified AIDS.
Was she?
Yeah, that's where she.
What about death, life, and
no, not metaphysical. It's how matter communicates psychological meaning.
Pardon?
Yeah, she does it with obesity.
You're fine.
Anne and Ziegler do it with respect to illness, the body.
That's what Jeff Lefferson does too, and he's paranormal. He talks about, you know, say cancer, and he talks about how it's manifestation as a result of psychological issues, you know, that are unresolved psychological
issues. Yeah, they take a different approach. You have a treat for you if you read those guys. Well, it's 2:30. Thank you.